Welcome back to Arts About.
Show about art, Sally, who's on the knobs and dials today.
It's going to be fun today.
It is going to be a bit of a ride, I have to tell you.
And Mark, who's sitting far too close to me. No need to sit on my lap, Mark.
No, John, don't worry, your lap's fine.
It's a show about art. Oh, it's a work of art in itself.
It most certainly is. Arts About is, of course, brought to you by the generosity of the McClelland Sculpture Park and Gallery and facilitated by the Bendigo Bank Studio. I'm Sally Bailey, and you're here with me in the Audible Peace Studios with artist-in-residence and cultural sounding board John Baird and the always astounding and often interrupting Mark Stewart. Brody Guzet is away this week, and I am on the buttons, and so anything could happen. What have you got for us this week, John?
I'm going to talk about a conceptual work of art that I made at 15. Mr. Timo, who's sitting over there.
Ah, yes, and of course. I didn't mention we have work experience Timo in here trying to keep me on time and on the air. Thanks, Timo.
And it's to do with boats and triangulation.
Oh, really?
Mm. I love triangulation.
That's isn't that to do...
Oh, you got quite excited there, Mark. Oh, yeah. A bit of triangulation.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Well, isn't that what Captain Cook was trying to do, determining the distance of the sun?
Oh, yeah.
But that was triangulation, wasn't it?
That was Captain Cook was part of that. The world got together to measure time so they could see... So for latitude, basically.
Yes.
Where they were. They had to go somewhere where they knew they could find out where they were.
Confusing as that is. Fantastic.
Still looking.
All right, well, I'm looking forward to hearing about that. What about you, Mark? What have you been doing?
Well, I did mention I was going to talk about lies last week, but I lied. So I'm going to talk about birds and how we name them.
Oh.
And there's also the possibility of a love poem. But we have to discuss.
Depends on how much time. Yeah, oh, is exactly. There any swearing in it?
No swearing, but it is a little X-rated.
Is it?
Mm, but I can always auto-bip.
Yeah, okay.
Or we can just ban you reading poetry.
That's true, John. I'm sure you'd be up there. But I popped a demand, John.
Fantastic. Well, in this program this week, we're going to be talking with Nikki Fisher, who is marketing for Cakes and Ale, some literary lunches that are going to become part of the Southern Peninsula series lately. We're also going to be talking with Patrick Elijet about the blues sessions that are becoming also a regular feature at the community theatre, which is just next to us. And we're also talking with Tom Putt, who's opened a new landscape photography gallery in the very groovy Mornington Industrial Estate, and that's opening on the 25th of this month as well. This is my last show for some time, folks. I'm going on holidays for a month. I'm off to the Kimberley, and you're going to be left in the very capable hands of Brendan, the station manager, and Mark and John. And you've got a series of interesting conversations, I think, coming
very
up.
Very interesting.
Have you planned any of them yet?
More of a kind of just take a reckless approach to a conversational radio, you know.
Well, John has, but I've got it all planned.
I'll bet you have.
So it's going to be...
I can't wait
to hear
the
results. Sounds like an assault.
Yeah, that's great. Well, I think it'll be absolutely fascinating. You never know what you're going to get, listeners. So it will be arty, it will be varied, and it will be chaotic, I suspect, won't it?
Well, Mark and I had a bit of a practice the other day over at lunch in Mornington.
Yes. You know,
and I have to say, what I had to say was very interesting.
Well, listen, while we get Nikki Fisher in to talk about the literary lunches in Sorrento, here are some sounds from the Kimberley, from one of my favourite bands and probably one of yours as well, the Pigram Brothers with Easy. Every fourth Friday of the month, Cakes and Ales Bistro in Sorrento are collaborating with Antipodes Bookshop, and they're hosting a series of literary lunches that include a three-course meal and a conversation with some very interesting writers. Coming up on Friday the 23rd of this month, author A.S. Patrick will be in conversation with journalist Gerard Elson about Patrick's book Black Rock, White City. Alex Patrick is a local writer who's written several short story collections previously, but won a 2016 Miles Franklin Award for his debut novel, Black Rock, White City, as well as it being listed as one of the best novels of 2015 by The Australian and The Australian Book Review. It's a literary thriller, and it is also the story of a marriage and is set during a hot Melbourne summer and tells of poet Jovan and his wife, teacher Susanna, both Serbian academics who have attempted to start their lives over again in Frankston after the deaths of their children during the Bosnian War. Grueling and gripping. It's a refugee story set in our very own Bayside hospital, possibly Frankston. To tell us about this new and regular inclusion in the local calendar, marketing director, I should say, of Cakes and Ale and this event, Nikki Fisher, joins us this morning. Good morning, Nikki. Thanks for coming on Arts About.
Good morning, Sally. Thanks for having me.
Nikki, it's a fabulous initiative to have starting up down here on the peninsula, a fabulous lunch and some nutritious substance for the mind. Is this the first one?
No, this is actually the fourth author that we've had. We have had Fiona Kapp, a journalist, Carolyn Baum, who talked about her memoir Only. And last month in May, we had Zoe Morrison, who talked about her fabulous book, Music and Freedom.
Fabulous. So it's been going for a little while.
It has, and I'm pleased to say that the others have been sold out successes.
So,
we were really pleased. We feel like we're on to something.
The
community have really embraced it.
That's very exciting to hear. So you listening out there, if you're interested in this, you probably better jump on the bandwagon fairly reasonably quickly. What can you tell us about this author, Alec Patrick?
Well, I have to be very honest, having read the book, it wasn't a world that I wanted to inhabit for too long. It's not an easy read. It's beautifully written. And this is his debut novel, and to win a Miles Franklin, that's pretty exciting.
Your first novel, absolutely.
Yeah, he'll be
talking. Miles Franklin.
Oh, sorry, John, I don't think your mic's on.
The Miles Franklin is not a first novel prize.
No, but it is... Well, clearly a very prestigious award with
a... And what a great thing to do with the first novel. I haven't got my microphone on.
No, I can't hear you at all, but but you are on, so I'm not exactly sure. No, you're not on.
Well, you said it was going to be fun and interesting.
Yes, I did. I pressed the wrong button. Sorry, John. John, what, could you just reiterate your question?
Miles Franklin isn't the Australian Literary Prize that is for first novels. There is one. I guess it's not the Miles Franklin, is it?
No, not to my knowledge.
So it's a great thing to do the first time you publish a novel.
Yes, and I think his publisher...
That's what we all lay around in bed dreaming up, isn't it? I'm going to write a novel and win the Miles Franklin.
A $60,000 prize.
It's a significant prize.
Attached to it, and that's something that we'll be in conversation with Patrick about, with Alec at the lunch, you know, the impact of winning that and what that means for for his writing career. And we find that the conversation is always something that the audience have an opportunity to participate in that as well.
Even if they have a mouthful.
No, we're kind. We wait until everyone's finished eating.
Okay.
Well, that was going to be one of my questions. How does the day progress, really? Because hopefully he gets lunch too.
Yes, we feed him, and everyone arrives and settles in and enjoys a beautiful entree and main course, and the ticket also includes matched wines. And then after main course, I introduce the author and the interviewer, and they have their conversation while everyone else is enjoying dessert. And then once that's finished, you get to ask some questions, and there's book signings and... how it goes.
So, I mean, it's obvious that Antipodes would be interested in doing something like this because, of course, they're a bookshop. How did the partnership evolve? Because it really is clever and it's wonderful, and I'm not surprised that you're selling tickets.
Well, Matt and James, who own and run Cakes and Ale, they are... I suppose all of us are originally from Melbourne and made the move down here, me 12 years ago. They've only been in the neighbourhood for about 3 years. And while we all love food and wine, we also love art and books and literature. And they're some of the things that we missed about Melbourne, that we wanted to create more events that... So it's all pretty indulgent, really. It's just something that we all liked and wanted to do, and we're really happy that other people are enjoying it too. And so we just hatched this plan and had a talk to Jane, who owns Antipodes, and she said, sure, let's do it.
Does the format always involve somebody interviewing the writer?
Yes.
Yes, it does.
Yes. Yeah.
And so who is he, the Jared Elson?
He is the one of the editors from a journal called Kill Your Darlings, which people may or may not be familiar with.
And it's a curious title.
And he's a journalist. Well, it comes from it's one of the sort of rules of writing that writers have to come to terms with, that sometimes you have to kill your darlings. That,
right.
You know, you may have written this thing that you think is wonderful and then the editor will say, no, we're going to get rid of that. So it's something you have to come to terms with as a writer.
Presumably, and not take it too personally.
Yeah.
Now, you mentioned before it's a tough read. It's an extraordinary novel because although it is set in their hometown here of Frankston or on the Mornington Peninsula or Bayside, I suppose we should say, it's not a provincial tale at all, is it?
No, well... It's full of twists and turns.
Is it?
And at times it is quite gruesome. And I suppose, to me, it is somewhat a statement about the war as well.
And it's a war tale.
Really. It's the tale of refugees, really, okay. Of coming to Australia and trying to fit into this Bayside scene where it's all about going to the beach.
Absolutely.
And the pleasures and joys of life.
Where they've come from, all this pain and suffering.
And within them, you know, they're containing the aftermath of the war and the loss of their children. Mm. And so it is a great insight into what that's like to try and live with that.
No, this is what Australians don't realise. A lot of the refugees come from such terrible circumstances and they arrive in this country where everything's, you know, fairly easy and life is about football and beaches and enjoying yourself. Mm-hmm. And they find it very empty, in fact. They don't find it very satisfying.
And he writes about that. And he writes, there's one scene where Jovan's working as a janitor and one of his colleagues is a janitor and he's sort of the quintessential Aussie kind of bloke. And they have a bit of an argument. And Jovan says, you know, Bill, he actually knows nothing about hate or even about love.
No.
And, that's sort of one little example from the book of the telling insights that Alec shares.
Do we know whether Alec Patrick is an Australian or is he a refugee? Is he Serbian? Do we know?
I don't actually know the answer to that, so we'll have to ask him.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Well, it's on the 23rd of June, is that correct?
That's correct.
And what's the best way for people to get tickets?
They need to go to Eventbrite website. So that's eventbrite.com.au.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just type in, there's a search box there, and you just type in, Literary Lunch, Sorrento, and then it'll come up. And for there may be some listeners who don't like to use the internet. We've come across that. And if that's the case, then they can just phone Cakes and Ale and
make a booking there.
And Matthew will help you out.
It's $85 for a three-course meal.
Three courses with wine. That includes the wine.
And a fascinating conversation. And it's coming up every – it's going to be the fourth Friday of each month, starting at 12:30, I think, going to 3:30. You've got some other fascinating authors coming up. Melanie Chung is in at the end of July. Jack Jock Sarong, a favourite of mine, who was the editor of the Great Ocean Quarterly and has written Rules of Backyard Cricket, I think. And
Yes. And he'll be talking about his book on the Java Ridge.
Fabulous. And more later on in the year. Please keep us up to date with what's coming up, Nikki. It's terrific. It's a great initiative and we really look forward to coming along.
Thanks for your support.
Thank you very much. While we get organised, we've got a few messages from our sponsors. You know what I haven't done, John?
You haven't loaded it up. Then now it's time for John on...
No. Do you want me to do it?
Well, you can do it live.
Yeah. And now it's time for John on.
Yeah, well, that wasn't as good as the...
One, no. Is he still in his galaxy?
We're all in our own little galaxy, aren't we?
Here we are.
Yeah, he's going all philosophic on me.
Now, when I was a young boy, or a teenager, mid-teenager, 15 years old,
yes,
Timo, I had the great fortune to live near Keeper's Boat Sheds in Beaumaris, and I knew a couple of young lads who had jobs down there, part-time jobs, and we used to hang around down there a bit. And the Keefers brothers who owned the boat sheds had an engineering workshop around the corner and they were busy around there and they pretty well just left these sheds in the hands of the young lads who were running it. And it was a boat hire place. Beautiful old rickety slippery jetties, old sheds, nice old boats with that were named after seabirds.
Little rowing boats or sailing boats?
They were little diesel putt-putts.
Oh, yes. Love a putt-putt.
Yeah. And it was just an all-round lovely place. Yeah. And while we were hanging around there, some boffins turned up and, much to our delight, started digging a fossilised whale out of the cliff behind the boat sheds.
Wow.
Yeah, there was an entire whale in there amongst the... Amongst the clay, yeah.
Yes, yeah, very clear.
And we used to collect fossils ourselves for a couple of years there. I always had a sand dollar in my pocket. A sand dollar is a little round fossil, like a fossilised sea anemone, I think they are.
Yeah.
Mm.
And it was always handy to have a couple of those in your pocket. You never know when you're going to need a fossil.
And no.
You had the sea anemones down at Kiefer's where you could put your fingers inside and it would close around.
Yeah, them.
Yeah. They were great.
Yeah.
I remember seeing a... sorry to interrupt again, John, but the...
really? Are you really sorry?
He's just practising.
a giant stingray down there.
Oh, yeah. There were stingrays. There were blue ringed octopuses down there. I knew where they all were.
Really?
First name basis.
Could send your enemies to particular spots.
In the boat shed, in the main boat shed in there, there was a photograph of three men in one of these fishing boats taken in perhaps the 1920s or 1930s off Ricketts Point. And... I knew that the rule of the boat sheds was that you weren't allowed to take the boats out of sight of the sheds, you know, so you could go a long way out into the bay, but as long as you were on a line of sight from the boat sheds.
With binoculars or without?
Well, you know, you could go over the horizon if you wanted to, I suppose. But around the corner at Ricketts Point was definitely out of sight of Kiefer's. And
that is true.
And I used to look at this photograph thinking, well, they're not obeying the rules around there.
Perhaps they were the Kiefer's brothers.
No? Given that the Kiefer's and the owners of the boat sheds were in their workshop and we had pretty well had the keys to everything down there, I made a plan, cooked up a plan to take one of the boats around to Ricketts Point, out of sight of the boat sheds, to where this photograph had been taken. I took with me a brick that I'd painted white and wrote my name on one side of it and I wrote the name of the boat on the other side of it and the date on the third side and the word marker on the fourth side. And I took that with me and we went round to where I reckoned the photograph had been taken and dropped this brick over the side into the water. And then I went home and I got out a bit of paper and I made a rough map of Kiefer's boat shed, Ricketts Point and all that area around Beaumaris, put a line on it that said line of sight and then put a cross where I reckoned the boat had been and where the brick was, wrote under that marker, and then I took that back down to the boat sheds and stapled it to the wall next to the photograph. And it was an utterly kind of pointless thing to do.
Yeah.
But... as I said earlier, my first attempt at a conceptual work of art, I think.
Yes.
The map I drew and then had it printed on my father's mapping machine at his office in
Moorabbin. Of course, your father had a mapping machine.
We had an engineering business. And the beauty of that was that they didn't stand the sunlight very well, so the map... once it had been up on the wall for a while, the ink completely and absolutely disappeared, leaving only a line saying line of sight and a cross saying marker. That was all there was left on the paper.
Did you frame it? Is it still in the
frame it? No, I just, brick, it's a bit of ephemera.
Did you go and put on your goggles and snorkels and go and look for the brick? Or?
Not yet, Mark, but you and I are going to do that one afternoon. We're going to get out there with the mask on and to see if we can find that brick.
40 years later.
Yeah.
Fantastic. That's a great story.
Thank you.
You've been at it since 15. Well, you've probably been at it for a lot longer than that.
Yeah, I've been trying to remember the earlier ones. Mm. More ephemeral than one might think, perhaps. Yeah.
Lovely word, ephemeral. And now it's time for... That's amazing, I never knew that. Mark?
Yes.
So let's see how many times we can interrupt him, John.
Oh, good luck. So that John story reminds me of my first sculpture.
That's quite a nice little book you've got there. You've been writing in the yellow covered notebook. Book.
Yeah, I love a little notebook. I'm not going to refer to it this time. But I have a sculpture I made at, when I was 16 in soapstone. It's
we're all going back to our youth at this
I'm just
today.
Talking about first art forms. And I wanted to make a head. I wanted to make a hand, in fact. Right. I couldn't do it. The hands are very difficult. So it turned into a head. And
soapstone's kind of like training stone.
Oh, it's just like, phew, you can do it with a knife or your fingernails if you want. But it is a lovely beginning. It's a beautiful stone.
I love the idea of clawing a hand out of soapstone with your fingernails.
It's how they make talc, actually. It comes from soapstone. But the it turned into a head, and I messed up its... It had a sort of like a hat, like a little fedora for an accountant, and I messed up the mouth because I wasn't very proficient. And so I called it an accountant with a speech impediment.
Yeah.
And my teacher liked that. We made an exhibition in Burke Road. I think it was ANZ building, was it, in Burke Road? And he said, look, you've got to put a price on it. And I had no idea you could sell this stuff.
Were you at a school long enough to have a relationship with a teacher?
Well, I've had a very, very difficult relationship with this teacher. Who was his name was Mr. Council. Yeah, he was one of those sort of funny-looking men. Anyway, we had the exhibition. He said, you've got to put a price on it. I said, I don't know, $30. Yeah, okay, $30. And some American came by and bought it. Yeah. And I was really upset because I didn't have any photographs of it, and I wanted to show my parents, and I was so proud of this piece, so it's gone.
Mm. Did you show them the $30?
No, I went and bought a surfboard. First thing. So I'm going to talk about birds.
Birds, okay,
yes.
Good.
You remember we talked about the charm of finches?
Yes.
There's also a charm of hummingbirds.
Oh, really? Perhaps it's a collective noun that gets used regularly for birds.
Yes. And for other things as well, actually. Charm, doesn't it? Mm. And then we've got a host of sparrows. Chime of wrens.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cute.
A raft of ducks.
A raft of ducks.
A gangbang of ash-breasted tit tyrants.
Surely not.
That is ridiculous. That is not true. You are wrong. No, I have never heard
of
that.
Ash-breasted tit tyrants?
No.
Look it up, and they're called a gangbang of them. So anyway, a concatenation of kookaburras.
Really? Mm-hmm. A concatenation?
No, made up. Yeah. A cockfest of cockatoos.
Yeah.
Yes.
And a single cockatoo, what do you think it's called?
A dickhead?
No, a cocker one.
Of course. I can't believe I said that.
Yeah, walk right into it.
And there's a murmuration of starlings.
Oh, yes, I like that one, a murmuration.
A descent of woodpeckers.
Yes.
Because apparently they start at the top, woodpeckers.
Ah.
So they don't have to be nice to anybody on the way down. An exaltation of larks.
Yes, I knew that one.
That's beautiful.
Birds generally are not nice to either each other or birds or other people.
No.
You know, all that sort of whistling and tweeting that we enjoy.
Yeah, look,
it's all insults.
It's all insults and fighting each other.
Yeah.
Is it?
Get out of my tree,
Yeah, get out of my way. You've got a convocation of eagles.
Oh, that sounds, yes, you have to have sort of an imperious word like that.
You've got an afterglow of Abyssinian long claws.
Oh, yeah, an afterglow.
Made that up too.
Yeah, that sounds like one you made up.
Did I say a mass of apostle birds?
No, but that's quite good.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is good.
Made that up too. A parliament of owls.
Yes, that's all. Yes,
you know that one. And to finish, an orgy of Andean cock of the rocks.
Oh, you made that one up.
You sort of make things up within a theme of some sort.
Yes, and what about, there's a murder of crows.
I was hoping you'd add to this.
Murder of crows.
Yeah.
Well, I would have said an exaltation of larks because that's one of my favourites as well.
A kettle of hawks.
Kettle of hawks. No, I didn't know that.
It's not bad. Oh, and a flamboyance of flamingos.
Is that true?
That's true,
That's true.
Yeah. No, it's difficult for you to believe what I'm saying now.
It is.
A siege of herons.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we have herons on our lawn at the moment.
Those white ones with the long beaks.
No, they're grey with a very long beak.
The long beak. I think the magpies get really angry because they look at the size of their beak and they go, Jesus, what chance have we got when we're trying
to... Do you think so?
I do.
Well, you don't think they look at their...
I see the magpies looking and going, what's going on here? Oh, they're listening. You see when they put their wings out and they listen?
Yeah, no, they tip their heads like a dog.
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Are we going to the love poem?
Well, look, are you ready for the love poem?
Well, I'm ready for the love poem, but as long as it's not going to offend anybody, is it?
Well, it depends who's listening.
Okay. If you think... Well, let's have a warning to our listeners. If you think you might be offended by Mark's love poem...
I'll auto bit.
Oh, will you?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so here we go. You ready, John? I know you've painted.
Never.
No. All right. Awake early with some strange music. It's about Melbourne as well.
Could you talk into your microphone, please?
I'm talking to my microphone. How's that? Is that better?
That's much better.
Awake early with some strange music in my brain, 20 floors up. Traffic noise reverberating as commuters make their painful way. Get out of bed, leaving my love curled up in her dreams, her soft blonde hair streaming down the pillows, my bip seeping down her thighs. She had slipped onto me around 3 a.m, undoing herself, like fire carefully disintegrating, taking my deliciously hard bip deep inside her hot, juicy bip, writing me out fast as waves of desire cascaded down. My bip became hers. She was bipping me.
It gets better, though.
Does it?
I think I'll just leave out that last bit. Then next bit. She came longingly, lovingly, like an inverted spring rose. Then I turned her over, entered into her from behind. She was warm and wet, whispering pungent words. What more could a man want? I came like a peninsular storm. We fell asleep in each other's arms, covered in primal cellular delight. In the morning light, I could see the contours of her ribcage, all shadow and mist. Smooth honed bone, soft taut skin, her golden hairs bright against the dark ink of her fractal tattoos, covering her back, flowing down to her arse, warm and full in the morning sun. On her sleeping face, her divorce line was gradually disappearing. From the windows, Melbourne was spread before me, the botanical gardens in all their glory, the dandenongs purple in the distant haze. Jimi Hendrix. The bay glinting on the other side, the Yarra heavy and corrupted, the rowers like dragonflies skimming the surface, the city small, insignificant, a captivating illusion of mercantile confidence. I miss the 70s grime, the gas and fuel buildings, Bourne and Welsh, George's, the Oriental and Occidental hotels in the Paris end of Collins Street, where women wore stockings and heels and petticoats and dresses that lifted with the breeze, where men smelt discreetly of whiskey and cigars. I miss the cigarettes and spittoons, the Greeks and Italians reeking of garlic on the trams. I descend onto the street. There are people everywhere with plugs in their ears, looking down at screens, giving their most intimate personal history away to young multi-billionaires for nothing, mortgaging their lives for a granite kitchen, a view, a Mercedes-Benz four-wheel drive, carrying coffee like talismans. They disappear into offices, cubicles, more screens, thinking about what they watched on Netflix. The only distinguished humans I see are all beggars, mostly men, grey, pallid, homeless aristocrats of pain and suffering, failures, still, holding up the skyscrapers, giving meaning to the mythmakers, corporations, gods, the layers upon layers upon layers of lies of this stolen land. I steal an Australian from reception, go back to my love, make a green tea and an Earl Grey with milk. It is warm inside. She's kicked off the 13 1/2 tog doona, is lying on her stomach with one leg crooked, moist morning bip lips peeking out from her magnificent ass. My bip hardens as I drop my jeans and shirt to the floor. My belt ringing like a bell as it falls and slip back into her, my love's.
Well, I don't know what you think, John, but I think that our listeners are in for a hell of a ride for the next couple of weeks. What do you think?
I thought that was terrific, Mark, but I think that a poem like that really should begin at the view and possibly end before we get home.
Well, I must say, have you ever thought of putting... You must have a lot of writing, Mark, do you? Are you ever going to publish, do you think?
Well, I don't know if that doesn't get R-rated.
Could you please talk
into the mic? Sorry, if it's not R-rated, definitely.
Well, I don't think... I think it can be R-rated if it's published.
Actually, I could. If you know anyone you'd like to, I'm very happy to...
Perhaps we should.
Are we out of time?
Yes, you've got 30 seconds.
30 seconds.
Anything interesting you can say?
I just want to say that Elon Musk, has launched Neuralink,
yes,
which is a medical research company that creates brain-computer interfaces, connecting human brain to computers.
It was always going to happen.
It's going to happen. Yeah. It's definitely going to happen.
Okay? Fantastic.
And a just for the drivers of the truck, John, an auto truck made 190-kilometer delivery of beer by itself, and there was no breathalyzer at the end.
And no beer missing.
No.
And it worked.
Fantastic. That's great. This is Taj Mahal with Catfish Blues. Now, I did suggest we were going to be talking about a little bit of blues before, but our guest hasn't arrived. So another guest that I mentioned earlier on in the show has come in to take his place. We're going to be talking with Tom Putt, who is a local professional landscape photographer and has also been awarded the International Landscape Photographer of the Year Award. He's about to open Australia's largest landscape photography gallery called Inspire on the Mornington Peninsula, somewhere in the groovy industrial estate. Good morning, Tom. Welcome to Arts About.
Good morning, Sally. Thanks for having me.
Tom, when are you opening your gallery?
Sunday the 25th of June, so less than 2 weeks away.
That's exciting.
Very exciting.
This is your first gallery?
It is, yeah. I've waited 20 years, so I've been a professional landscape photographer since 1997 and always dreamed about opening my own gallery, but sort of things and life events got in the way. So this is my foray into arts and selling my own work.
It's in Progress Street, is it?
It is, yeah. It's Factory 5/27 Progress Street. Okay, so yeah, great. everyone knows common folk, and I just tell them it's sort of diagonally opposite.
Well,
that.
You're amongst the Joshes in there. There's a couple of Joshes.
Is there?
Yeah.
I'm yet to introduce myself to everybody, but yeah, I'm getting there.
Well, it's interesting actually. That little part, that industrial estate, is really turning into quite a groovy precinct.
It
and
sure
there's
is.
A quite a lot of art things
is there
that.
Cafeteria yet? Can you get good coffee? Or?
At Common Folk you can.
At Common Folk you can.
I just know the garages. So
and then down the other side opposite the Mornington Peninsula Brewery. Here we are plugging everyone else's business. But it's good. It's like a great area to be a part of.
Buying paintings.
You know, it's unbelievable. And when I was looking for the space, I was just amazed at all the other arts, you know, sort of going on in that area. For
is
example,
Aboriginal?
There is. Yeah, just across in the parallel street.
Is it really
street.
Aboriginal or fake?
I'm not sure. I haven't sussed it
We're
out well enough. and then across from that again, there's another art gallery there with a collective of various artists in there as well. So it's becoming a bit of a hub, which is fabulous.
Right, depending on the quality of the art, of course.
Can you please talk into your microphone?
Of course.
It is a very brave thing to do to actually launch out and run your own gallery.
It's quite scary.
Is it?
Yes. Yeah, and I think that's part of the reason why it's taken me 20 years, to be brutally honest, is that putting your work out there and having people criticise it both positive and negatively is particularly challenging for us artists who can be quite sensitive and see.
Is it your work? Or?
It is only my work.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. And so that makes it all the more daunting, I guess.
So nobody else can come in and you're not.
Unfortunately, not. No. It'll just be my work. But we will have regular exhibitions. So we're leading on the 25th of June with local Mornington Peninsula images and landscapes, which is what I'm particularly passionate about. I've lived in Melbourne all my life, but for the last 18 months, my partner and I have been here on the peninsula with our 5 kids. And so I've been concentrating on just photographing these local landscapes and absolutely
loving it. So when you open a photographic gallery, you're going to operate as a photographic studio as well, where there's commissionable work?
What we'll be doing is we'll be just exhibiting my work, but then I also run photographic workshops. So I actually teach other people about landscape photography in particular. So we'll be basing ourselves out of there. So several times each year, probably 4 or 5 times each year, I run one-day workshops here on the peninsula where we go out and we take beautiful photographs, you know, in and around the local precincts, but then do a Lightroom session. So download our photographs onto our computers and learn a bit of the post-production. And in the past, we've actually just hired, you know, rooms down at Mona Links, etc., to do that work. But now we've got our own space, obviously, in Progress Street there in order to be able to run those download and Lightroom and computer sessions as well in this gallery space.
It's a large space. It is.
It's over 125 square meters. It's obviously industrial. It's a factory. We went in there a few weeks ago signing a lease with just bare concrete floors and bare concrete walls. And since then, we've been able to turn the ugly duckling into a beautiful swan.
No, no about the ugly duckling thing. You know, concrete, I reckon, is pretty good.
It's got its own sort of place.
Yeah.
But,
we love a bit of concrete.
The problem is that you either have to seal it or paint it, because it tends to sort of leach this sort of concrete dust if it's not been sealed in any way. paint.
Absolutely.
So what we've done is we've painted the walls white and we've put a really nice polish on the floor. And it's got that industrial feel, of course, but with a little bit of, you know, upmarket stuff as well, just by a bit of paint on the walls.
That's a pretty groovy look these days, I think.
It seems to be, yeah, that industrial look.
Tell me a bit about your work. What are your photographs like?
I'm going through a bit of a passion of aerial abstract landscape photography at the moment. And I was just exhibiting some work in town of that. So for the past 12 months, I've been travelling all over Australia to photograph that, Lake Eyre, you know, places in Western Australia, here on the Mornington Peninsula, getting up in light planes and helicopters and doing that type of work. I do have a drone. The quality of the drone is not necessarily at the standard that I need it to be. All of my artwork in this gallery will be roughly about 1.5 meters wide. So it's sizable artwork to put on big pieces, you know, big pieces to put on big walls, so to speak.
Black and white or colour?
No, it's all colour for the moment. But I do have a selection of black and white images that we'll be exhibiting later on in the gallery.
Will they be unique pieces or limited editions?
The aerial work is limited edition, 1 of 10. Mm-hmm. The rest of the work is open edition.
So is the rule still that if you want a big raw file, you need a big camera?
Well, I like that rule because it allows me to spend money on lots of big cameras. And I've got a beautiful Pentax 645Z, which is a medium format digital camera, right, which shoots 50 megapixel photographs. So, yeah, it produces a beautiful quality file. Yeah.
Tell me the format of landscape, because I guess by actually, if you're doing aerial photography, then you are changing those rules. But landscape photography also refers to a proportion, doesn't it? It refers to a rectangular image of with a horizon in it. But an aerial clearly doesn't have that.
That's why I said abstract.
I still consider it to be landscape photographs, of course, because it's of the landscape.
Of the landscape.
You're just taking it from a different perspective, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so it obviously doesn't have a horizon in it. Often what I'm trying to do is challenge the viewer with that aerial stuff to be able to have people look at it and say, what the hell is that? Or say then, is that a painting or is it a photograph?
Yeah.
As I said, we're exhibiting on the weekend at Den Fair, which is this beautiful art and design show in the Melbourne Exhibition Centre. And a lot of the people were initially challenged with what actually was, because they couldn't tell whether it was a painting or a photograph.
It links in rather nicely with a tradition in Australian painting as well of aerial views of landscapes. Fred Williams and John Olson are both.
And masses of the Aboriginal people.
The Aboriginal dot paintings, I believe, are from obviously, you know, the Aboriginals standing up high and looking down on the ground. And, you know, the spin effects and what have you that creates that sort of dot pattern.
They couldn't get quite as high as Brett Whiteley, though, Mark.
They were the big consumers of opium when the Chinese were first coming.
Really?
And apparently, the stories about Aborigines travelling, time travelling. So we don't really know whether that's true or not.
But all right.
There's that possibility.
The other thing I think that aerial does, when you don't have a horizon, is you lose all sense of scale.
Yes.
Because I know my husband will take some very beautiful photographs, and he often will, you know, I'll often be wondering where the hell he is, and he's miles back and he's lying on the ground and he's got his lens and he's taking a shot of a tiny piece of concrete that just has really fascinated him. And often you look at them and they could be really distant aerial shots of great landscapes or tiny little ones. It's really interesting that there's a real kind of you're thrown about, your senses are a
perception. This is what how they describe Giacometti's Sartre described Giacometti's sculptures in that sense, that you're not sure whether you're looking at something from a huge distance. You could be very close to it, these very tiny sculptures, and it seems like you're looking at it from a long distance.
Yep.
And so it's this idea of perception.
Yes, because we don't realise, I think, you know, our view of the world we think is really set and really pedestrian, but in fact, actually, it's all interpretation.
Well, once again, it's why we spoke about the fact that when we're looking at someone, like I'm looking at you, I'm only seeing a third of you, and the other two thirds is being filled in by my brain.
Yeah, yes. Actually, I'm really beautiful.
I don't think he was doubting that.
No, I was just wondering what the other two thirds are swimming with.
It happens in photography as well, whereby where I'm teaching my students on my workshops is that you don't have to include all of the sky for us to know what is left.
Yeah,
so, you know, often you'll point the camera down, include this beautiful foreground that leads your eye into the frame, and just have the strip of the sky at the top as a reference.
Yes.
But then it's blue, and the eye automatically knows that the rest of the sky is blue as a consequence. Yeah. So, yeah, you can often make that those why assumptions and fill it in. Oh, I don't know why it's blue. There's probably a technical answer.
But well, there was also that fascinating thing, wasn't there, just a while ago, and it made a big thing over the internet. Everybody was looking at the photograph of the blue and white dress, and some people saw it as blue and white and other people saw it as a completely different colourway. And it was actually, in the end, it was talking about your eye reacting to one colour and it was the relationship that it had to the colour that was next to us was actually... Define what you saw.
That is interesting because I had a print that I've got just hanging in the gallery now just as a fill-in, but it's of Broome in Western Australia with the red Pindana sort of cliffs in the mangroves diagonally opposite. And everyone was saying, I love the orange in that photograph on the weekend. And I'm like, do you see it as orange? Because I absolutely see it as red. And I'm sure that was because of the...
Well, we'll get Sully to report back.
I'm off to Broome in about 2 days.
Ah, good. Well, you can tell me whether they're red cliffs or orange cliffs. Lucky you. What a nice part of the world.
I know. I'm very excited about that. So getting back to your gallery, it's opening on the 25th of this
25th
month.
25th of June.
In Progress Street. And what's the exhibition called?
I haven't given it a name. It's like an opening launch. This is, you know, the Mornington Peninsula will be featuring in particular.
Yep.
The work that I've been shooting over the last 18 months or so, both from the ground and up above. I'll have to think of a name.
High and low.
Yes.
Yes, maybe.
But the gallery is called?
The gallery is called Inspire.
Inspire.
Inspire. It's Factory 5/27 Progress Street. Everyone's more than welcome, 4 till 6 p.m. on Sunday the 25th.
And once you're open, are you going to be open during the week?
We'll see if we can set some regular hours. I'll be down there most of the time, but obviously people are best just to give us a call and make an appointment time so that we can make sure we're there to show them through the gallery.
Okay. Well, what you've got? Do you have a website?
I do. Yes.
Can we hear what your website is? I will make some links on the Facebook page, and I'll put your phone number and the website on it. But if you can just tell our listeners now,
InspireFotographyWorkshops.com. So InspireFotographyWorkshops.com is the website for now, and you'll see all the info about the workshops that I run, but also how to RSVP to come to our gallery launch on the 25th.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for coming in. It's great to meet you. And we're going to go back to a little bit more blues now while we work out what to do. good luck with the exhibition, Tom Putt.
Thanks, Sally.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you.
That is the fabulous Phil Manning, who will be playing at the blues session event that is going to be on at the community theatre next door to us later on in the month. I think it's the 23rd, but July the 8th. Patrick Elgin, we were expecting in today, didn't make it. But keep an eye out for his venue if you're into the blues. I'll put a link on our Facebook page. It's time for the news, and we don't have any typewriter because we just don't today.
You haven't got those bits, have you? Typewriter.
I have. It's because I'm doing
that. Marlowe, no more of him either.
That was a terrible intro to you.
I'll get a better one.
You've got to get a better one.
You need some drums or something, Mark.
Steve Reich's drumming.
There's lots of things going on. Of course, Dark Mofo is on right now, which I wish I was at, but I'm going to the Kimberley instead. John Cecil Fine Arts opened up in the Old Poffs restaurant and has a limited edition original limited edition prints of Lloyd Reith's lithographs on there right now. That was really hard to say. Lloyd Reith's.
So we have
Reith's lithographs.
Literary lunches are coming up at Cakes. I love the.
Oh, no, you have to turn the page. Cakes and Ale.
Where is that?
Yeah, Cakes and Ale. Like literary
Cakes and Ale in Sorrento. Sorry. Yes. The first is A.S. Patrick. What was her name?
Nikki Fisher.
Was speaking very well about him. About his novel Black Rock, White City on Friday the 23rd of June, followed by Melanie Cheng, Friday 28th.
I think we're going to one of those, aren't we, Mark?
We're going, yes.
Yes, you are. So it'd be good to be able to talk about it.
We're going to eat some poached food.
Yes. As I mentioned, the Mornington Peninsula Blues Sessions are on in Mornington Community Theatre on the 8th of June. You can get your tickets at MorningtonPeninsulaBluesSessions.com.
Inspire Gallery, Australia's largest photographic gallery, is opening in Progress Street in Mornington. And we think we called that some years ago, didn't we, that will become the arts hub of Mornington over
there? Yeah, we did actually, didn't we? It's not surprising. It looks like it probably
more like
will be.
A garage hub, no?
Yeah, that's very
good.
It is
at the moment, but the garages will get pushed out and the arts will take over.
Which is exactly what happened to Chelsea in New York.
That's what you've said in the past, yes.
No, I haven't, John.
Okay, well, this is my last show for a while, everybody. Mark and John are going going to keep the home fires burning with their very special version of Arts About for the next 4 weeks. I'm on holidays in the very far west, out of sight and out of range in the Kimberley waterways. Mm. I look forward to coming back.
We'll be eating pizza in here while you're not here.
Yeah, well, I'll be eating fresh caught barramundi. Sorry about that. If you've just tuned in, you've missed Arts About, but you can catch up with the show via podcast, which should appear on the station website sometime in the near future. The show is also repeated on air and streaming Wednesdays at 12. You'll find a link to our Facebook page on the RPP website. Join us again 11 a.m. next Sunday. And remember, everybody, we may not know everything about art.
But apparently young Timo over there knows what he likes.